Welcome to the Vernier Show, Novak Report, and the American Political Zone. From New York, this is Frank Vernuccio.
And from Washington, this is Daria Novak.
And Daria, you're from Washington, so hopefully you're not dodging bullets or carjackers at this point. You know, the nation's capital is supposed to be a place for all Americans, but the crime level that is there is so frightening that I think it deters a lot of people from visiting. If you look at the crime statistics, the Washingtonian folks are saying, well, crime is actually down. But then you look at serious crime, murder, rape, carjackings, things of that sort. Well, not so much. But even if you say the numbers are down, down from what? Astronomically high heights? Something had to be done. Far too many have ignored it, and President Trump decided not to ignore it.
You know, they may try to claim the numbers are down, but I thought it was very telling when just yesterday Mayor Bowser from DC said that, well, maybe it was okay that they got some help and that maybe these other agencies that are coming in are cooperating with the police. And what I found even more telling than Mayor Bowser basically being nonchalant about the thing, but not opposing it per se, was the fact that when the evening news on several of the networks for the DC news channels interviewed African Americans, and the city is basically African American, they wanted help. They said the crime was bad. They said that they had to dodge bullets. They actually call Saturday night in Washington, DC, retaliation night. And the reason for that is there's so much gang violence on Friday nights and drunken fights that end up with stabbings, with carjackings, with shootings, that Saturday night is the night when the friends and the gang members of those who were shot, hijacked, or stabbed come out to take retribution against those that committed crimes on Friday night. So in this city, nobody is safe. And if you look at the crime reports from the college campuses in Washington, D.C., you will see that students are alerted several times a day to violent crimes that are occurring either on or around colleges in D.C. This is not something that is free of, I shouldn't, how do I put it a better way? This occurs in the federal part of the city, the part where Americans talk about seeing the monuments and the museums. This is not limited to Northeast or Southeast DC in areas that are poor. This is citywide where there's crime. When they showed the news clip on the TV last night, I was literally shocked, Frank. They went down a street of very, very nice looking townhouses where you would say probably people who work for the government or on Capitol Hill live. And they showed one car after the other with either bullet holes in it or windows smashed or graffiti painted on them. This is such a normal occurrence that it's almost become normalized to have this type of crime level in DC. But I'm glad that we have Judge Jeanine Pirro in there cracking down. You know, it's going to change things to some degree. But unfortunately, if a crime such as murder or rape or any violent crimes are committed and the person is under 18 years of age in DC, basically they get off. Judge Jeanine Pirro cannot even go with her people onto the Capitol grounds. There was a case recently where somebody who was kicked out of the country as an illegal, who was a violent criminal, snuck back into the country and was working as part of the grounds crew on the Capitol. And when the DC, when this person was about to be arrested by ICE, certain members of a certain political party helped the person escape back into the Capitol. Frank, I bet you can guess which political party was hiding a violent criminal who had previously been expelled from the country and had committed additional crimes in this country.
Yeah, you know, let's look at the two phrases that are being kicked about by the opposition to this measure. One, they're saying that the federal government is being authoritarian. Well, I'm sorry, but take a look at the Constitution. This is a federal enclave. This is governed essentially by the federal government. They give permission based on some legislation going back to the middle of the last century, to local rule for the basics of how that city is run. But the city has screwed up. It has failed. The municipal government of DC is a failure in terms of crime. And so it's every right by the federal government to move in and do what is necessary for the safe conduct of government in the capital of the United States. It is not authoritarian, it is common sense. Number two, the old cliche of course, everything that you do that the Democrats disagree with is racist. But just as you pointed out, who is the chief victims of these crimes in Washington, D.C.? It is people of color. And so, whether it's in Washington, D.C., or New York, or Chicago, or L.A., when you crack down on crime, you are actually doing something for the people of color in those areas. The media, nevertheless, continues to tout these two nonsensical things that it's authoritarian or that it's racist to do this without any substantiation of their position whatsoever. This is an obligation not just to the federal government, which runs the area, which operates in the area, but to the people who, heaven's sakes, live in that area. Crime in DC has gone amok. It is no longer appropriate for the government to ignore it. Indeed, it would be racist and it would be unconstitutional, I think, for the government to ignore this situation.
You know, Frank, I have to totally agree. I was expecting to see a lot of people disagreeing with what was going on in DC with this, but they're not. The people that live in the city are supporting it because they've had to live through the fact that stores are closing down because of the number of robberies that are occurring, the number of violent crimes in stores. People want to be able to shop in their neighborhoods. But if there's no CVS, if there's no grocery store, what does that do to the neighborhood? What does it do to the community? If their children can't go play in the parks, can't go play basketball for fear of being caught in gunfire. We've seen in DC children in strollers that have been shot. We've seen children in their beds where bullets have gone through a window and either near missed or killed children sleeping in their bed. This is an outrage that the capital of this great country is literally under attack from violent criminals. And it's not just illegal criminals. We have gang members. We have drugs in the city, fentanyl running wild in Washington, D.C. You know, Frank, I am so glad to see it because I don't live that far from Washington, D.C. And I really think twice every time I go into the city. I really think, do I want to be there after dark? Do I want to park on a certain street that normally is a federal building? I would think nothing of parking in that area. You know, it really is actually become a topic in my town in Northern Virginia that DC is becoming so violent. There's so many criminals that in order to find new people to rob, they have to move out to the suburbs because they've just are so violent and expansive in their activities in the last couple of years.
You know, it is a tragedy that in blue cities across the country, that communities which have wonderful people in it can't actually shop, can't actually walk around at night, whether you're talking about parts of New York City, whether you're talking about Chicago, certainly LA. The ignorance or the refusal by municipal governments in blue cities to pay attention to crime is criminal in and of itself. You know, there used to be a saying, Daria, there's no Democrat or Republican way to pick up the garbage or to police the streets. It just is what you do. It's the basics. It's beyond partisanship. It's beyond ideology. But somehow or other, the increasingly hard left has decided to ignore those basics. It is absolutely reprehensible. And it seems that we need to have a return to nonpartisanship when it comes to the basics of urban administration. Daria, let's go to our first guest. Rabbi Daniel Schoenbuch is a licensed psychotherapist, author, and the host of Viktor Frankl podcast. Rabbi, welcome to the program.
Great to be here.
If I've mangled your name, please correct me.
You did a good job. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm a lifelong New Yorker. I grew up, in fact, on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. I must tell you, though I have my ear to the pulse of the city I never anticipated that parts of New York City would begin to resemble parts of Nazi Germany in the 1930s. How did we get to this horrendous point?
Well, if you're referring to October 7th, it was definitely a beginning point for what we're experiencing right now with the campus demonstrations, Hamas on campus, uniting with the far left and the communist parties all together on campus against the Jews. That's part of what's happened, and it just didn't stop. The reason it's not stopping is we have a guy like Zohar Mamdani and the Democratic Party who are supporting the concept of defund the police. So we just saw what happened at Columbia University. They didn't enforce the laws. It's part of the same problem. The more you don't enforce laws, the more violence you have. And unfortunately, it may be turning into something which is seen under fascism in the 30s in Europe.
Isn't it fascinating that in if you look at the history of the past 120 years or so, whenever there's been a totalitarian government, socialist government, anti-Semitism seems to go hand in hand with that, doesn't it?
Yeah, the Jews are the perfect scapegroat. So any fundamentalist government or fascist government, like the novel 1984, they always have to have an enemy that they fight against. The Jews are often used as the enemy. And right now, Zohar Mamdani and the Democratic Socialist America, combined with the Islamic fundamentalists, have found their ultimate enemy, which is the Jews. And they use October 7th as a reason to do that.
You know, when I was growing up, there were a lot of Jews living in our town, and I'm older, so it was closer to World War II. But the stories were told about what happened. It was remembered, and it was talked about as never let it happen again. We have the Holocaust Museum in Washington. How did we get to a point in just a few years where so many in our population seem to think that this is false about what happened, or it's exaggerated what happened, or it didn't, really matter because it was such a small problem and we have bigger problems today. How does it get so distorted?
Yeah, this has been happening. This has been in the making for many years right now. It took several components to make this happen. You have to have a Democratic Party falling apart, going to the side of communism and socialism. You have to have I'm a psychologist. I talk a lot about the Viktor Frankl and man's search for meaning. I mean, you have to have a lot of meaninglessness in society, people in Manhattan, people on the campus. You have to have a virus which the government mismanaged, which turned into dumping $1 trillion in the economy, which turned into hyperinflation, which turned into it gives them ammunition on the left to say, look what's happening. We can't afford things. It must be capitalism the problem. The problem is not capitalism, the problem is socialism. And that increases the rates, and that's what we're facing right now. And then all you have to do is have an October 7th to trigger it. And what you really see happening remarkably is this, what I call the red-green axis, the red-green alliance. You see these strange bedfellows getting together right now. You see the far left, run by the Democratic Socialists of America, run by Tlaib and AOC and all those people. And they're working with a guy like Mamdani, and he has to just make that connection between the far left and Islamic extremists. The question is, why would they work together? Because they want to take down the West. I knew this on October 7th because on October 8th, they exploded in the West, in the streets of London, streets of Paris, the streets of Berlin. And on campuses in America, in Times Square, they're exploding. This is before Israel could even respond to the mass murder of 1,200 people, respond to 250 people taken to Gaza. The Israelis had done nothing at that point. We were attacked at that point in the streets of New York City. These forces have come together potently with one objective: to take down the United States. And I can tell you something, if Mamdani wins, God forbid, this may be the beginning of a domino effect. New York represents the most powerful country in America, powerful city in America, the most important country in the whole world. It's an icon for capitalism, for freedom, for culture, for education, for medicine. If he takes down, or if they take down New York City, the rest of the country could follow.
I have to ask this. Are today's youth, I'll say the college age ones that we see protesting in New York and elsewhere, are they mentally, psychologically weaker? Are they more prone to somehow believing these mistruths that are out there?
Yes, some are weak, but most are just empty, and that's the real problem. This emptiness, the meaninglessness in society, that vacuum, the vacuum of meaninglessness, is what's causing all this. All you have to do is come up with a cause, kill the Jews from the river to the sea, globalizing intifada. Do you know why Zahra Mamdani doesn't want to condemn the term globalizing intifada? Because he wants to globalize the intifada. And no one can believe it. Take these people at face value. When Hitler talked about taking the Jews down and taking the West down, he meant it. Take them very seriously. Zahra Mamdani is part of that as well. He's a far left-wing communist. And it's not just we're digging information on him. He's saying it himself. He refuses to condemn the Islamic anti-Semitism as well. He's a very dangerous person. This is happening in real time. And unless New Yorkers get together and figure this out, we're all in trouble.
As you've said, this didn't happen exactly overnight. How much groundwork was laid by an educational system that basically ignores or warps history? Certainly in terms of denying the Holocaust, of not talking about the history of what happened in Germany. When that was knocked out of the curriculum for the most part by a radicalized educational profession, was that a key component in bringing us to the point where we are now?
Yeah, it's a progressive weakening of the Western world. We have to take down the educational system. They had to take down the financial system. That's communism. They have to promote DEI, which destroys the image of God that a human being is created with. They have to destroy sexuality. They have to destroy the very family unit, which built us in our communities and gave us the greatness that we experience in America today. They're taking us down. It would be crazy. We'd be sounding like conspiracy theorists a few years ago. We're seeing it all happening in real time. Thank God the President Trump is doing something about it. He's fighting back by the opposite of defunding the police, strengthening the police. He's strengthening our borders. He's knocking out DEI. He's saying men can't compete with women in women's sports and violate their privacy. He's fighting back on every level. We have to support him. And I hope that we can do the same thing in New York by picking anybody but Mamdani at this moment.
Let me ask a very, very uncomfortable question. Why is it that so many Jewish people in New York seem to be tilting towards voting for Mamdani?
I don't believe it. I don't believe some of the statistics that came out from the Mamdani camp. I don't believe their statistics at all. Most Jews are against Mamdani. We have our far assimilated leftists that may support him. We have our useful idiots like everybody else. But if you go around the streets of Brooklyn, where I live, go around the streets of traditional Jews, of your average Jew out there, they're terrified of Mamdani. Some people don't want to say it in public. They all know how dangerous he is. But again, it's a phenomenon of the far left.
How strong is social media in all of this? People today say, oh, don't believe social media, but everybody's got a phone out and everybody's looking at the latest video. And the more salacious, the more views it seems to get.
It's true. The only way to compete with them is do the same thing. And unfortunately, I'm not seeing the same energy from the good guys, whether it's Cuomo or Adams or anybody but, it's Curtis Sliwa, anybody but. They're not hitting the streets with the same impact of social media. They're not using the same weapons that Mamdani's using to fight back. And unless they do that, and that's why I'm here to talk about that. That's why you guys are here to talk about it. We're using social media right now. We have to get on the airwaves. We have to get on the internet and keep on talking about this. Because listen, it's not just us that's going to be damaged. The people that are really in danger, let's be honest, are Hispanic Americans or African Americans. Could you imagine if they defund the police in these communities in New York City? The ultra violence we're going to see, the utter destructiveness of communities. Look at our subway system in New York City today. Who can go in that subway system thinking they're going to make it out alive today? Just last year, somebody was burned to death. People are pushed on the tracks. There's people that are ill, mentally ill. I'm a psychologist. I deal with these people. There's people that are mentally ill and violent walking around our city because they've defunded the police at this point. We need more police, not less police. Mamdani wants to send in social workers to deal with people with guns and knives murdering people. It's insanity, but unfortunately, he really believes it. But unfortunately, words have implications. We could see death based upon the words that he's using.
During the Biden administration, traditional Catholics were a target. They were considered domestic terrorists in many cases. Parents who stood up for their children's safety in public schools were considered domestic terrorists. Is there a trend here? Is it the fact that perhaps people who defend the traditional family, people who practice a faith, are subject to scrutiny and reprisals by a government, because any source of authority, of moral conscience, that's not the government is considered an enemy of the government. And was this not true both in the old Soviet Union and in Germany, that people of faith were targeted because a tyrannical government doesn't want any source of conscience or any source of guideline outside of what they proclaim?
God represents safety. God represents structure. God represents morality. They want to get rid of God. And so the people that represent God, Catholics, Protestants, Jews, even Muslims, moderate Muslims, anybody that represents values and the family become the enemy of the state. When Zohar Mamdani, we don't have to look far to see his statements just a few months ago, when he says, seize the means of production, that's hardcore Marxism. Just go back 100 years to Marx, what he did. Go back 100, excuse me, go back to the Stalinists. Go back to 100 years ago where people were put in the gulag. Why are they put in the gulag? Because he's a bad guy? No, because if you're a socialist or communist, if people disagree with you, you become the enemy of the state. That's coming up in New York City. Anybody that disagrees with him, by his policies to save America, to save New York, will be considered an enemy of the state. What do you do with the enemy of the state? You have to get rid of them. So that's exactly the pathway they're taking right now. This is a fascist push, which we're seeing in New York City right now. Unfortunately, no one can believe it, but the Jewish people we have a lot of history on our side. We understand history. We are very keen observers of history, of danger. And we've seen this all happen before, only 100 years ago. It's happening again right now, but now we're seeing something different. We're really seeing this unity between the reds and the greens, between the communists and the Islamic fascists. That's the Democratic Socialist America working with Islam in America. We're talking about Tlaib, AOC, Mamdani. They're working together. Why do you think they're coming to New York and standing up there? Elizabeth Warren. Why does Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts come to New York City? Because they smell blood. They know if we take down New York, we take down the rest of the country. This is extremely serious, and all New Yorkers in danger. We got to do two things. We have to get everybody to register to vote coming up. We cannot become depressed based upon false statistics that they're presenting in the media. Not all statistics are false. Some are valid, some are not. We have to get in and do everything we can to convince people not to vote for him, to register to vote. And of course, on November 4th, everybody has to get out and vote if we want to save our city.
What do you think the reverberation of a Mamdani regime, if you want to call it that, of him in office will be across the country? I look at New York as a financial capital, Broadway, high-tech industries, Wall Street, with people that are moving out to the suburbs, companies moving out. What is that going to mean for a trend in this country?
Well, it means major economic centers like New York are going to fall apart. People that have money, by the way, the people he's hurting are not the billionaires and the billionaires, because they can leave whenever they want. It's the middle class people that have second homes, African Americans, Hispanic Americans, all of us that own something, that rent it out a little bit. He's going to make a rent freeze on them. Those apartments are going to fall apart. No one's going to want to invest in a place where their investments are going to fall down. So there'll be less investment in New York. Wealth is going to leave. Jobs are going to leave, inflation's going to go up, less products. He wants to make these subsidized supermarkets. He's hurting his own people. There's a lot of Islamic Muslim Americans that run these little kiosks in communities here, these bodegas. They're going to be hurt. If he controls prices, he's going to hurt his constituents right now. They're going to start losing jobs. And in a city where jobs are being lost, there's less wealth, less money. The city starts falling apart. That means if there's less money, less services for picking up garbage, less money for funding the police, less money for education. He's the recipe for disaster for New York City.
Ilhan Omar from Minnesota says that when she thinks of her government, she thinks of Somalia. Dalia Rodriguez from Illinois says that she is a proud Guatemalan before she is an American. How much are we seeing with this basically foreign philosophy of socialism? How much are we seeing this as it being a total rejection of America and Americanism?
Yeah, these are spoiled socialists. I mean, if you think about what she grew up in Somalia, if you think where Zohar Mamdani came from, you think America's bad, go back to Uganda where he came from, one of the most violent countries in the world. And so these are spoiled people that live off the beauty and the wealth of the United States. Many of their constituents take Medicaid. They take services from the country. They benefit from the police. They benefit from hundreds of years of Judeo-Christian civilization, which is relatively peaceful, which is safe, which is ethical, which is structured, which is family value, family focused. They take advantage of all these goodies that they've been given that you and I have all benefited from our entire lifetime, and they want to take it, they want to destroy it. I think ultimately they're jealous. They want more of it. And so they fantasize about what they had in the past, and they want to take down American society, but they don't understand they're destroying themselves. If they take down America, all the Medicaid goes, all the food, which is affordable America, that goes as well. Everything goes with it. At the same time, everybody's taken down by the communists and the socialists.
A lot of the left talk about getting everybody out of poverty across the board in America. They come up with all these government programs that take from those who are working to give to those who are not. But they also talk, in essence, about destroying the nuclear family. Isn't that a stabilizing force in this country? Family values, two parents in the household. And isn't that better to get somebody out of poverty? Or aren't there fewer people, I should say, that are not in poverty when there's a two-parent household?
Oh, 100%. One of the predictors, I'm a therapist, I'm a family therapist. I mean, one of the predictors for emotional and societal success would be coming from a relatively stable family where there's a father and there's a mother and you have a support system and you get a good education and you get values from your parents. So the left is going to, or trying to get rid of the family structure. The Marxists wanted to get rid of the family structure. This is all coming from, these are the ghosts of the past from 100 years ago, which crept into America, to answer Frank's question before. It's been going on campus for 40 years. What you saw on October 8th, the day after October 7th, exploded on campus at Harvard and Columbia and Princeton and Yale, all over the country. What you saw there was the manifestation of 40 years of extreme leftism, Marxism, and communism on campus. Our kids are programmed on these campuses to hate us, to hate America. And unless we do something to change that, like Donald Trump is trying to do, he's suing the campuses, he's enforcing the law, he's fighting back against anti-Semitism, that's the only way back to form a stable society is clean up the mess on the campuses, clean up the mess in the Department of Education in Washington. They have perpetuated the DEI concept. They have perpetuated all the wokeism we're seeing, and they're literally destroying society by doing it.
You know, one of the things that Frank and I have talked about through the years on air is the fact that more conservative, I'll call the middle of the road Americans, are more concerned with family, going to work, enjoying a baseball game. They're not political activists. On the progressive left, we see that they're often hired to go to rallies and demonstrations and participate in riots, that they spend a lot of time on political affairs. How does this country combat that when the average American just is, I don't want to do that. I want to spend that time with my children, my family. How do we get a critical mass to stand up against this progressive left?
I think the answer is for all the soccer moms and soccer dads, right? We have to tell them that their way of life is in danger right now. And if you didn't believe us, just look at exactly what you said, Daria. I mean, the Zohran Mamdani won because he activated the left, the socialists, the Islamists in the city. We know that from their statistics where they got their votes from. He was able to do that because those are the people that tend to dominate in primaries is the more extreme forces. He was able to put together that red-green coalition, the far left and the Islamists. And he was able to do that. The only way to fight back is to get your soccer moms, people across this country that are family people, that live decent lives, to realize that their way of life is in danger. It's not something they're going to say, well, it's out there in the Middle East somewhere. It's right here in New York with Zohran Mamdani. It's happening in real time. And if they don't wake up, they will unfortunately lose everything they have.
As a psychiatrist, how do you explain the fact that we've had over 100 years of examples of failures of socialism, whether it's the Soviet Union or the National Socialism of Germany, or even what's going on in Venezuela right now, a nation awash in an ocean of oil that somehow is impoverished, if you can believe it? What mental trick are the socialists using on themselves to ignore over 100 years of examples on just about every inhabited continent on the planet to want to do socialism yet again.
Well, all this fantasy is very attractive to people. It sells them a false bill of health. It says to them, here's it's called absolutism. When you have this terrible meaninglessness in the Western world, lack of values, lack of meaningful experiences, anybody that comes along with this absolutism becomes very attractive. I have the answer. So the dangers to American society are the absolutists, which is the far left and the far right, in this case, Islam as well. When they present, this is what's going to save everybody. I'm going to freeze the rents. We're going to seize the means of production, take over your property. We're going to give people free buses. It's an extremist position, and people are just excited by it, and they buy into it psychologically. It gives them their way out. But we know that real human happiness comes through working hard. You know, Viktor Frankl, who I write it and I talk about a lot, and I practice the psychology, says happiness cannot be pursued. It must ensue. And it only happens when you do something meaningful and value-based. So we have to teach people that real happiness comes from values. We have to earn money one day at a time. We have to build our families one child at a time, one day at a time. When we slow it down and do the real work, when we become responsible, we then get the benefit of happiness. What they sell the absolutists is something for nothing. That's why it's so dangerous.
Before we lose you, I'd love to hear your prognostication on this. I see the internet now as being negative for the most part, destroying tr people's trust in information, in authority and sources. Do you think that there is a possibility that people will start to reject social media and all of these sources and go back to community and start to reconnect in person just out of fear that they can't trust what is online?
It's one of the most important thing I recommend to all my clients. If they're parents, I tell them to turn off their phones at night. When your kids walk in the house, put away your phones for 1 hour, have them put away their phones, look at each other eye to eye, and just start talking to each other and listening. There's nothing as satisfying as a deep human relationship with somebody you love. The internet cannot replace that. Disney cannot replace that. Netflix cannot replace that. But unfortunately, to answer your question, I don't see it going away. I see it getting worse. Because now we have to deal with AI as well, trying to replace people in general and all our jobs. So technology is, it was meant to help us, it may end up destroying us in the long term.
One final question. What distinguishes the Judeo-Christian ethic from just about every philosophy or religion across the world is an emphasis on the value of each individual soul, each individual human being. Is it not inevitable that a country governed by a Judeo-Christian ethic would come into conflict with socialism, which basically says that people are just cogs in a greater wheel? Are we, in essence, almost doomed to this fight?
Yeah, Dennis Prager, the famous writer and philosopher, talks a lot about this. He says there's no, there in the 20th century, there's almost no wars between two democracies. Democracies happen between war happens between democracies and fascistic or communist countries. So they are agitating. If we just left democracies alone, we wouldn't have the conflict. But because they exist, it tends to just force them against the one force which will stop them, which is ultimately democracy. So there's no answer. We have to keep on fighting, unfortunately. And if we can't do that, we're going to lose.
How can our audience follow you and your work?
To go to my podcast, it's called the Viktor Frankl Podcast. I also offer coaching programs at torahpsychology.org. They can look at my writings, my videos there, and I'm happy to answer anybody's questions through there as well.
We've only scratched the surface of these important questions. I look forward to our next conversation.
Nice to meet you.
Take care. Yeah, Daria, there's so many important issues and so many fundamental issues that the rabbi just brought up. But I think it's almost, again, we're almost doomed to this conflict. And it's got to be a mental trick. When you fail, when socialism has failed so often in so many ways for 100 and so years, you've got to wonder about the sanity of the people who want to do it all over again.
You know, I always get shocked, Frank, when you ask somebody on the progressive left to explain the policies that they support, to explain the justification for their belief system, and they don't seem to be able to do it.
Yeah. Or they attack you for even asking the questions. Let's go to our next guest. Michael Letts, you've heard about our program before, is the founder and president and CEO of Invest USA, a national grassroots nonprofit that's helping hundreds of communities provide thousands of bulletproof vests for the police forces throughout our nation. Michael, welcome back to the program. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, Frank. It's always a privilege. I thank you for the honor of being with you.
My pleasure. President Trump is deploying the National Guard in Washington, D.C. I think the question of any rational person is almost what took so long for the federal government to do this?
I would have to agree with you, Frank, and I will be glad to answer that question. We haven't discussed that with the administration for quite some time. There are those, and even with all the appearances I make across the country, who still give me a jaundiced eye to begin with. We're not going to a dictatorship now, are we? This is not going to change the Constitution, etc. I understand the concern, but let me give you reassurance. The president has no intention of changing the Constitution, becoming a dictator general, or any other words you want to use. The situation is very simple. We have allowed the nefarious activity, the depth of depravity, and the corruption within our government to reach levels unprecedented in any historical event. And because it is that bad, Frank, there is no way, especially when you combine it with their, and this was not coincidental, this was well planned, with their plan to weaken law enforcement, defund the police, create mainstream media to say we're a bunch of thugs, we don't deserve, the decency of being able to live, et cetera, et cetera. When you package that all together, you put law enforcement in a position. There's no way we can deal with this situation by ourselves. We were required to. You're talking about not petty thefts, pickpockets. We're talking about cartel members. We're talking about human sex traffickers. We're talking about terrorists. We are talking about some of the worst all across our country who have come from foreign prisons and been dumped into our soil and told to rake hell and just do everything they can to be disruptive. There's no way we can handle that with the decapacitated law enforcement levels that we're at. Let me just give you an example, Frank. When Joe Biden took office, we had roughly 1.4 million sworn officers across the country. When he left, we were under 700,000. That's over 50% decline. There's no way you can handle effective law enforcement without adding all the other critical elements in there with that kind of capacity to begin with. So we had very in-depth discussions about this. The decision was made that we would need to engage military assistance, and we have been gradually preparing the mindset of the American people to take that as assistance. What did we say we would lay out the strategy to be? First of all, we were going to go after illegal immigrants that were criminals, criminals from other countries that had come here already had a rap sheet, or those who came here and decided to become criminals in the United States. We would target them first. We would then go after if we those who were here illegally, but we would also at the same time target the cartels, target human sex trafficking, and target terrorists. Now let's do a little report card of where we're at, Frank. Borders have been shut down. 0% crossings in the southern border, roughly 3% of the northern border. And we'll get that ball valve turned off all the way here shortly. Second of all, we have declared war on the cartels. We have labeled them many as terrorist organizations. We are using military assets to deal with them head on. Why is that necessary? Frank, these people have more money than our government itself on some days. They have more assets. They have more ability to gather armaments. This is a little side note, Frank, but you've heard it often. Now we're finding verification of it. All these arms you thought we were sending to Ukraine, where do you think they actually end up at? They end up, Ukraine ended up selling them on the black market to the Taliban, who turned around, ISIS, and the rest of them, Al-Qaeda. And made sure the cartels got hold of it, got a pretty handsome profit in doing so. So they're better equipped than we are. We have to have military assistance if we're going to be able to conquer that. Same with human sex traffickers, the same thing with the terror cells. We still have 120 sleeper cells in this country. That's a shame. We need to make sure that we go after, I'm pressing the administration. They don't have the right to exist in this country. We need to go in and eliminate them, take them out. You can either go voluntarily, you can go out in a body bag. It doesn't make any difference to me. And quite frankly, it's time to remove those from our presence in this country. And so we've been headed down that direction, but trying to gently prepare the American people for what is coming. Now, what has happened in D.C.? Well, Frank, we're fixing to experience something this country could be extremely devastating, academic proportions. And what is that? You know, 3 weeks ago, you saw the riots, youth riots in Cincinnati. We're getting to the point to where young people, for some reason, Frank, think that the end thing, the cool thing to do, is to go down to downtown and beat up a bunch of elderly people who are enjoying music or enjoying the festivities, film it, see if you can be the first one to get it on YouTube or whatever it is that they had now, Rumble, et cetera, and get your 15 minutes of fame. Problem with that, Frank, is you know how young people operate. Once something becomes the end thing to do, they all want to gravitate to it. So we're now seeing that in the last 3 weeks, Cincinnati, New York, LA, Seattle, Portland. I can go down the list of similar events that are happening. The straw that broke the camel's back was in D.C. over the weekend. You had 100 young black thugs. Let's call them what they are, okay? Thugs who descended on the park by the Naval Yard downtown. They began to get rowdy, destroy property, harass people, assault people. So law enforcement was called in. They stood the law enforcement down. The law enforcement had to retreat. And why is that? Because they're not capable? Oh, no. They're more than capable if you turn them loose. They just have policies. You remember liberal policies in D.C. that hand ties the law enforcement community. So what had the president done? He had told the mayor, he had told city council months ago, crime is out of control. You either deal with it and handle it, or I'll do it for you. Now they didn't take him seriously. Now they gave him some lip service. Yeah, we're working on it. Then they even started lying, Frank. Oh, crime's down. Look at the numbers. Well, I don't know where she's living talking about the mayor, but I can give you the numbers. And there is 27 murders per 100,000 per capita in D.C. Frank, that is the highest of any location in the United States. It's in the top 10 in the world, including Venezuela, Bogota, and Baghdad, where you know they're killing people left and right. That's how bad it is in D.C. So when the president saw that now we're allowing our youth to get involved in this mindset that there is no accountability and it's spreading like a virus, like a wildfire, he said we have to take drastic action. It's now time to launch into the next phase. We're bringing in the National Guard. Now we federalized D.C. There's a difference between that and what happened in L.A. In L.A., we brought in the active duty Marines and the National Guard in a defensive parameter. We did that to defend law enforcement should they be under threat and to defend property, federal and state property, or any property we were asked to defend. That's it. We didn't take any arrests. We didn't do anything else. We left that to the locals. Under the federalization in D.C., these National Guard members have now been deputized. They can make arrests. So people are getting nervous saying, well, they're not properly trained. Frank, we know how to handle the situation. This is not our first time at the rodeo, okay? What you do is you take three or four guardsmen, you add one or two local or state law enforcement officers, you put a team together, and you put teams strategically all across the locations to show a force of strength, and you quickly tell them what the president said. If you're an illegal immigrant who is a criminal, make sure you got your little baggie packed because you're going home. And that means we're deporting you as soon as we get you in the next couple hours. If you're a criminal who is a citizen, U.S. citizen, pack your little baggie, but you're not going home. You're going to a prison nearby. We're going to make sure that you're out. And furthermore, because of the fact that the homeless create an atmosphere, bringing in drugs and leaving needles, et cetera, that it creates a atmosphere that's conducive to crime. We're not going to punish you. We're not going to penalize you, but we are moving you out. And we're moving you to locations that we are setting up that have the infrastructure necessary to give you services, to help take care of you, but you will no longer have free rein of just walking around and terrorizing or harassing the citizens of Washington, D.C. This is a model, Frank. We're successful here, which there is no doubt in my mind we will be. You're going to start seeing this across the country. Where are you going to see it predominantly? Well, where are the problems? They're in blue cities, sanctuary states. Not saying that we won't do that in red cities and red states if it's needed, but enough is enough, Frank. And I understand we've known all along we were going to have to bring in military presence to do so. Our goal and intent is very simple. Once we get a control on this and restore law and order and safety to the American citizen, which you so rightly deserve, it is your constitutional right to have that, Frank. Once we get that restored and under order, the military goes home. There's no
Well,
need for us any longer.
Michael, here's a question for you. We have rules on our side, on the side of law and order, that we have to follow. There's
Correct.
training. Contracts have to be let in order to buy equipment. Budgeting has to be done. If we're looking at the forces that law enforcement is going up against, they have Saturday night specials, incredible amounts of arms that
Correct.
are illegal arms that they can get overnight. They don't have to worry about budgeting. They don't have to worry about training protocols or anything else. With the decrease in the number of law enforcement today, and with what I am sure are morale problems when their hands are tied behind their
Correct.
backs from acting, how do we change that where the police can be agile enough to move into these cities, whether it's with the help of National Guard or otherwise? How do we act agile enough to actually turn things around and not just make a small dent?
Oh, that's a great question. Great question. And here's our two-pronged approach. First of all, by taking this very firm, hard stance, using military personnel, using military assets. Look here, I don't want it any more than anybody else, but if an M16 or an M60 is required, you better believe we're going to use it. And once we go in and clean this out, we remove this especially illegal immigrant element of crime, and they're gone. And we've locked up the other people as much as we can, which is why Justice Jeanine was saying, and that's a separate discussion we can have today, but that's a separate element. It won't do us any good to clean it all out if we take them all downtown and then let them all back out by 5 o'clock this afternoon. But the goal is to remove them so that once we step back, you now have a situation that you can control. We're going to have to address your situation. We're going to have to make sure, do you have the armaments necessary to do the job? Do you have the funding necessary? Do you have the training? And quite frankly, this is very critical, and this is what I'm pressing that nobody likes, including on my side. They don't like me when I talk about this. But folks, PTSD and mental conditioning is vital when you put somebody in a role to determine between life and death. And so we're going to have to make sure we provide those services as well if we're going to have the best of the best. Because look here, I don't want you running out there with the ability to take 100 people out if you've got some issues that should have been dealt with long before you ever put that badge on.
Can I
How
ask
do you
one so
explain?
quick, okay, go ahead,
Frank,
Daria.
could I just ask one quick follow-up? So
Sure.
Michael, how are the police today doing with recruitment? I realize President Trump is not in that long, but the military are seeing a turnaround. Are law enforcement agencies?
I would love to tell you the answer is yes, but I would not be being honest. We are seeing a turnaround. Okay, we bottomed out. You're seeing it come around. Military bottomed out and shot up. We're taking a gradual approach. And you have to understand, the military didn't like what was occurring in the military, so we left. Now you've got a change in the military. And okay, circumstances are great now. I'm coming back. Law enforcement, not only did I not like the circumstances, but you made everybody hate me. And at this point in time, I'm not so sure that your attitude towards me has changed. And so I'm going to be a little bit careful, especially now that I'm getting comfortable realizing, I don't have to jeopardize myself and my family to pay the light bill. And that's put a real ding on where we're at. Fortunately, we have still a lot of people up there that say, yeah, I don't have to do that to pay the light bill, but I love helping people and I want to do that and I want to come back, but I want to make sure that I'm welcome back. So where we have done a very poor job, and I'm telling the administration, we've got to turn this around, is now we have to focus on making sure that those who want to serve their community feel like they have the respect and the honor and the decency for stepping up and doing so. We're not there yet, Daria. We need to be. We're getting there, but it's going to take some more time.
Two aspects of law enforcement that seem to be common sense, but seem to be rejected, particularly in blue states and blue cities. One, the concept of recidivism. A huge percentage of our crime problem is due to a relatively small percentage of professional criminals. You put them in jail, they come right back again, they do the same thing. The other part is lax enforcement, lax punishment for younger criminals, say 14 to 18. And yet, in some places like New York State, the concept is actually not to be more strict on younger criminals, but to actually what they call raise the age so that a someone who used to be 16 years old, you couldn't do certain types of punishment for them in terms of incarceration. Now they want to raise that age to 18, which makes no sense whatsoever. What is going on there? What's the mindset of those politicians?
Well, and that's where the real problem lies, Frank. I'm glad you hit on it. Is here's the issue that we have, as it says. Let me tell you how it ties in with what we deal with on the street. From 14 to 18, the worst I could do to you, Frank, if you murder somebody, rape somebody, whatever you want to do, I can get you taken in, might get a judge to send you to a detention facility for 6 months a year, but you're getting out by the time you hit 18, and your record's expunged. You never did anything wrong. And now you have a second chance. Well, that sounds awesome. Why don't we have a big heart for these young people? Now let's talk about the truth of the matter. The truth of the matter is, when you have that get out of jail free pass type immunity and ticket and situation, criminals and thugs, older criminals and thugs, say, Frank, I want you to do this. The worst that can happen to you is a couple of months, and we're going to set you off for life. And so once they get a taste of crime, do you think they ever go back to a civil obedience type situation? No, we've lost them. So we're doing absolutely nothing but the reverse of what they think or do. You're not having compassion and helping those kids to have a second chance. You're destroying them for the rest of their life. So what we believe very firmly is this, Frank, if you can think of the crime, then you should be willing to do the time. I don't care whether you're 14, 10, 15, 20, 25, whatever you conceive. And you do, you should own up to and hold be held accountable for. That needs to apply to every one of us, any age, from the presidency on down to the janitor.
So where do we go from this? How do we look at these statistics? And by the way, I fully agree with you about the statistics not being accurate. If you recall in New York City, when Mayor Giuliani first took office, he took a look at statistics and he goes, "This is a bunch of garbage. This isn't accurate." In Washington, D.C., where they talk about the crime rate lowering, well, if you decide not to prosecute a felony and call it a misdemeanor, well, miraculously, your rate of felonies has gone down simply because you've decided not to classify a carjacking as a felony.
That's correct. They have so many ways, Frank, of doing this. Just what you said, classification. What they'll do oftentimes is they'll say, they'll look at violent crime, then they break it out by age category, geographics. Oh, well, crime went down in the Southern District. Stop. Don't talk anymore. Crime has gone down in D.C. No, crime went down in the Southern District and doubled in the Northern District. Okay. But no. We found a place it went down by a point or two. That's all we're talking about. Crime is down. And they make up anything they need to be able to validate their point. The problem is they're not being honest. What media outlet do you know nowadays that's honest? If you find one, let me know. I might try to subscribe to
Fiduciary Novak Report in the American Political Zone, our show.
it. Yeah, you got that right. That's the only places people can go to for truth and honesty anymore. You can't go to the mainstream media.
So tell me this before we quickly lose you. Why do these mayors in these blue cities that are progressive left go for these type of policies? What do they benefit from? It's
It's a
destroying their
package deal.
cities.
It's a package deal. They don't, first of all, they don't care about the citizens or their cities. They care about power. I want to be mayor for life, okay? And so how do I get to be mayor for life? You bring me illegals. You bring me people that can stuff ballot boxes. You show me how I stay in office. I don't care about the consequences to the average citizen. As long as I maintain power, that's all that's of interest to me. That's what they do. We end up getting stuck with the results. Look what it does to our society.
It's been a fascinating conversation. Mike, how do people follow your work?
If they go to our website, that's invest.usa.org. It's a charity.org. They can find out how to contribute to make sure our officers have the necessary equipment to protect themselves. Frank, we need it now more than ever. I tell folks, I don't care how much you contribute. You can contribute a dime for what all I care. What I want to make sure that the law enforcement officers on the street know is that America supports them. It's what Darius said a few minutes ago. We need you back. I need you to re-engage and recommit to guarding and protecting your community. But they're hesitant to do that because they don't know where we stand. Can we show them where we stand? Can we say, look, I'll put a buck on making sure you got a vest to protect yourself. If that shows you our support, if that's all that's required, let's do it. Let's get in this thing together. They're willing to put their lives on the line to die for you, and they don't even know you. Can we not at least make sure they have the ability to come home with their families? That's where they go. Go to our website. You can contribute there. Books there. You can keep track of everything we're doing, and there's plenty of opportunity to get engaged. Help save America, folks. And we're not out of the woods. Just because we have a new administration, we got a long way to go.
Michael, I look forward to our next conversation.
God bless you. God bless America. Thank you all for taking the stand that you do. Truly, I meant what I said. Nobody, there's no other place to go find truth except for outlets such as yours. And we thank God that you exist.
Thank you so much. And to our audience, thanks for tuning in today.
We welcome our newest radio affiliate in Tucson, Arizona at 95.5 FM, in Provo, Utah at 90.5 FM, and in Tucson, Arizona at 95.0 FM. They join Washington, D.C. at 96.7 FM, Las Vegas, Nevada, 92.1 FM, Lancaster, Pennsylvania, 1640 AM and 102.1 FM, Tampa, Florida, 92.1 FM, Ritchie, Florida, 88.3 FM, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 90.3 FM. Macon, Georgia, 810 AM and 98.3 FM. Boulder, Colorado, 100.7 FM. Long Beach, California, 101.5 FM. And in Pittsburgh at 107.3 FM. We're also available on the AMFM247.com, iHeart, Spreaker, and the Conservative Commandos. Tell Alexa to play the program. Tune in to our television show, The American Political Zone, on the AUN Network, Roku, and Public Broadcast TV. You can access either program on our website at usagovpolicy.com. Thanks for listening, and join us again next week. We're sponsored by the New York Analysis of Policy and Government, a division of the American Analysis of News and Media, Inc., at usagovpolicy.com. And the Institute for American Politics. Email us at truthinradio@gmail.com and tune in to the American Political Zone television show, also on the AMFM247.com network.
Our producer and director is the brilliant Jeff Hansen.